I'll pee in my van until this issue is resolved. I can't work like this.
Welcome to Southeastern Zone, 90.9 FM KSLU. This is Experience Points. I'm MG.
And I'm Red Bear.
This is the show where a couple of lifelong nerds drop some knowledge on you.
Knowledge and nerdom.
We're glad to be back.
Possible facts, too, by the way.
Possible facts. You may catch something from listening to this show. You may catch some intelligence.
You may get some awesome.
You may get some experience points. You may level up. You never know.
That's the idea.
We have an awesome show for you tonight.
I'm excited about tonight's show. Near and dear to our heart. You do realize, like, every few shows we say this is near and dear to our hearts.
Well, I mean, we wouldn't be doing the show if we didn't have a lot of near and dear emotional thing, you know.
Goodness was not near and dear to our hearts, implicit value for
the things we talk about in this show. Before we get too deep into anything, Bear, we have a website.
That is exppoints.com. You have to double tap the P.
Now, I know. I know that you don't like that I go into every
social media. I don't. I just
media.
Had this discussion backstage. He's about to cover every possible social media that exists except MySpace. He's working on it. Know that.
So what I'm going to do in the future.
In the future. I'm going to have
exppoints.com, double tap the P, /social. And /social is going to be big buttons of everything we have.
That's all you have to do.
Until then, though, /Facebook, /Twitter, /YouTube, /Google+, /Google+,
the plus sign.
And /Stitcher and /iTunes and /Steam if you're interested. So we're international, we're worldwide. We've got over 50 episodes on iTunes and Stitcher. We had, 500 something listens last quarter or whatever. It's really, really good.
That wasn't just me listening 500 times.
No. It's all unique. Uh-huh. So we've got a lot of stuff going on. Before we kick it with what we did last week, we're going to go ahead and drop into a song real quick. This is Pretend by I Fight Dragons. They're fresh out of their Warped Tour. I guess Warped Tour ended a month ago.
I think Warped Tour's over. It's been over for a little while. And, that's sad. I really got to get back there.
I Fight Dragon said, their album's delayed, but they're dropping new stuff, new tracks.
It is in the future. Near future or something like that?
Yeah, the near future.
Near future. That's the future soon
is a Jonathan Colton song.
That's why we do this.
So this is Pretend by I Fight Dragons. I'm MG.
And I'm Red Bear.
You've been listening to Experience Points on Southeastern Zone.
90.9 FM KSLU.
Welcome back to Southeastern Zone, 90.9 FM, KSLU. Still Experience Points, still MG.
Still Red Bear, believe it or not.
That was Pretend by Fight Dragons. Really awesome. I love the ending, the little whistle, dealie that they do at the end.
Whistle dealie that they do. That's what Matt likes. He likes whistle dealies.
I like whistle dealies. What'd you do this past week, Bear?
Wow, well, I finally jumped on the bandwagon. I pre-ordered Warlords of Draenor.
I'm like, you're doing drugs?
Is that the bandwagon? I mean, all the cool kids doing drugs? I knew I was doing something wrong.
Yeah.
Man, I want to be cool. So I pre-ordered Warlords of Draenor. Apparently my account had been hacked, and so all my stuff's gone, and all craziness.
Wow.
So, wow. On WoW, by the way.
Wow. Egad.
It's okay, because I do get a level 90 boost for the pre-order, and I'm just trying to decide what class I want to be in.
It's interesting that it was hacked. You didn't know? You must not play very often.
I didn't play very often. Okay. It had been off for a while. I'd gone on a few times since Mr. Pandaria, but then, that's the only description I have for that. And then I just kind of ignored it and let it roll for a while, but someone had hacked and the password was different and everything. I had to call Blizzard. It was fun.
You don't have an authenticator, I'm guessing.
I have an authenticator now.
Oh, you did before.
I didn't before, yeah. I'm rolling a D&D character. I'm going to start that up on Sundays, so that would be some fun.
Any specific version of D&D or just...
Actually, I need to look into that. I got links and stuff. I'm just that guy who doesn't read anything.
Nice. You're going
to
show up and you're I made a dwarf. I made a dwarf. I don't think you could do that.
I made a gargalot.
What?
I like a dork.
You're just making things up.
Because it sounds like dork, but it's
you can't
better.
Do that. No,
it's a
who
dork
says?
That can beat people up.
There you go.
So I'm a little behind everyone on this one. The Breaking Bad thing apparently was a thing.
Breaking Bad.
I'd watched the first season back in the day, and I'd made the mistake. So I've been trying to go to sleep on time, but I've made two mistakes. A, I pre-ordered Warlords of Draenor, and B, I'm in school, and C, Breaking Bad. Yeah. I picked it back up on Netflix. Just clicked the button. plowed through season two. Yeah. Amazing. Halfway through season three now. If you haven't checked that out, because it was good in season one. Now that on season two and three, it's amazing.
I know everything. Season one was just the taste, and that's typical of seasons, yeah, of series, you know, that season one's always the introductory, you know, establishes some characters, relationships, doesn't really give you too much, enough to keep coming back. But then season two, bam.
No, it happened.
Stargate, well, Star Trek. Oh, well,
Stargate.
Everything.
Those are great examples of, well, those are shows that can run on forever because they're compartmental. Each episode, you know, there's some overarching story, yeah, but like you can just
the
make it up.
The micro is very micro. The meta is, or the macro is very, right, macro.
Now, one thing I am really happy with in Breaking Bad, and it goes, what, five seasons, I think?
I think it's five, yeah.
I think it's five seasons. See, so with shows like this, like Dexter's a great example of a show I can't stand because of what it did, where you have this problem that's introduced in season one. In this case, Walter White has cancer. That's not a spoiler. He has cancer.
What?
Yeah.
Continue.
Whoa.
Go ahead. Snape
kills Dumbledore. I'm sorry.
Oh, man.
But anyway, so Walter White has cancer. And so when that happened, I'm thinking, well, if they're going to make the show go indefinitely, he can't have cancer forever.
Right.
Because that's not how cancer works.
So they've established that at some point something will happen.
Something will happen or something.
It'll either,
blah, blah,
it'll either kill him or resolve.
But my point is they have dealt with this very well. And yeah, something like my problem with Dexter is, well, he's, you know, he's a murderer. And a mass murderer, and eventually he's too good at his job, is how I felt. So, like, seasons roll on, and, like, he never gets caught. He never has issue with, right, this, really. And I'm like, eh, so that's not realistic. But the way they've done it in Breaking Bad is amazing.
We know how you feel. Breaking Bad better than Dexter.
Breaking Bad way better than
and
Dexter.
And I agree.
And then the other, I did one other thing. I've been playing with Inkscape and trying to be all artsy.
Yeah.
Got a little secret side project going on. So, if Inkscape's free, by the way, if you don't have money like everyone else in the world. And it's great for making vectors.
Yep.
And introducing yourself to art in digital form.
It's sort of equivalent to like the free version of Illustrator, kind of like
I
guess if like you're an artsy person that doesn't really know open source or freely available type tools, Inkscape is really one of the best alternatives.
Yeah. By the way, it is open source and there's a great community behind it with lots of documentation. So you know what to do.
It's effectively GIMP. The GIMP is Photoshop for free.
Right.
And Inkscape is Illustrator.
Is Illustrator for free.
Which is awesome. Well, that's good. I'm
less confusing than
GIMP.
You
know, I'm glad that you GIMP is pretty confusing.
It is. That's the problem with GIMP. You open it up and you're like, I don't even know.
Right.
It's sad whenever Photoshop looks simpler.
Yeah. The that's more cool
simple.
That you're getting into Breaking Bad, because I know that was one of my favorite series that I will watch it again in a heartbeat. It's just there's a lot of time investment into it.
It's an hour long drama every episode, and so that does not bode well for sleeping early.
I think it's like 13 or 14 episodes a season.
Yeah. So like that's. You're not going to
sleep. It's sort of Game of Thrones.
Yeah, and that's another thing. This week, I gave up on, like, so one day, Monday, was my objective. I'm going to go to sleep like a normal person.
Yeah.
And then I pre-ordered Lord of Lords of Draenor and started watching Breaking Bad again.
Man,
I'm very self-destructive.
You're bad at time budgets.
I am. So what did you do this week? Did you sleep?
No.
Okay, no, good. I'm not alone.
Similar reasons. Destiny was released yesterday.
Yeah, it was.
That was to us. That wasn't the biggest thing yesterday, but Destiny got released yesterday.
It was a big
thing.
And,
you know, I told myself Monday night, I said, if I go to sleep and I'm not going to set an alarm to wake up at, I think it was 2 a.m. Central Time, and that's midnight in California.
That's how time zones work, yes.
Well, it's going to be released worldwide midnight California time. So 2 a.m. our time, Central Time. That's when it's going to be released. I said, you know, I'm not going to set an alarm. If I wake up anywhere around that time, then I'll get up and I'll play it because, you know, excitement or whatever.
Yeah.
And it's really cool. I have a PS4, so for those that don't know,
you can
plug the earbuds into the controller and then turn down all of the volume on your, like, stereo or whatever and just hear from the controller. And it's just you.
So you don't wake up your family members.
Right, right. So that's really cool.
Man, if we had that technology whenever I was little, you know how often, like, I'm the guy, I literally would shove towels under my door and pillows to try to muffle the sound.
You would make your own
audio. Yeah, and the light, so my mom would know I was up at 3 a.m.
Yeah.
On a school night.
It's the same thing that sort of the Roku does with its thing where you can plug it into a controller and listen to it. I think it's like a Wi-Fi direct audio stream or something.
Sure, this is better than the Roku.
Anyway, I said, you know, I'll do that. So I did wake up. I woke up at like 2:30. Yeah, the new Roku 3. So I woke up at about 2:30, got up, you know, stealthily went in the living room, turned on the projector, turned on the giant projector, made it so that no one would hear anything except me. And then I played about 3.5 hours of Destiny. And then I was like, all right, I'm done with Destiny for this night.
for this.
I'm going to go to work. I'm going to go to sleep. I'm going to go to work. So I go to sleep. I wake up like an hour later. I go to work. I'm dead tired the entire day. Come home, instantly worth awake. Instantly
isn't that funny how that works? End of your work day, you go home, you sit down.
I'm ready to play Destiny again.
I'm about to go to boom. Time to play games.
Back to Destiny. I'm rolling an Exo Hunter like I did in the beta and the alpha. I'm really enjoying it. Nothing really super crazy yet. I have gotten to a level where you pick up a giant magical sword on the moon.
Yes.
And it turns from a first person shooter to a third person hack and slash like action adventure game, like dungeon crawler. And I just get to God mode through. I don't get to God mode because I mean like you could easily die in this game. And there is some you know what do you call it. I can't think of the name, but bad things happen to you when you die. You can't just go in willy-nilly.
Consequences,
yeah.
Wow.
Repercussions.
Okay, there you go.
Anyway, so I played Destiny. I mowed my lawn. I actually, for my birthday.
Mowed my lawn.
My birthday's coming up. MG's going to be older soon.
Mm-hmm.
And my family said, you know, man, we know how you do this geek show. We're going to get you something. Here's a weed eater. It's not geek related at all.
It's just think of it as being, you know, like
it's,
Skyrim.
It's there you
or
go.
Something. You know, or no, Zelda, where you had to cut down the bushes.
Oh, okay. I was going to say the Norse had to cut the grass sometimes.
Yeah, and you're wondering, why was that guarding that bush anyway?
That's it. I did play Wind Waker. I turned on Wind Waker for the GameCube version of it. And
actually,
I
may pick up the Zelda that came out for the 3DS.
Oh yeah, that's a good one. The Link Between Worlds.
Yeah,
that's a direct sequel between A Link to the Past, which is one of my best favorite games. But best favorite games.
You have some crappy favorites. I mean, this is one.
I do have some really bad favorites. So that was my week. You know, we did some stuff. We played some games. We're gonna cut to another song. We're gonna come back to our retro game, which is Metal Marines. This is a direct request from Russell. He was on the show a while back. He schooled me in the art of Metal Marines for the Super Nintendo. There are three versions of the Metal Marines. We're gonna talk about specifically the Super Nintendo, but. Yeah, so this is for Russell. Whenever he listens to it, hopefully we do it justice. This is The Link by YT Cracker. I'm MG.
I'm Red Bear.
You're hearing it here on
Southeastern Zone, 90.9 FM, KSLU.
Welcome back to Southeastern Zone, 90.9 FM, KSLU. Still MG.
Still Red Bear.
Still Experience Points. That was The Link by YT Cracker. We're going to jump into our retro game segment. This is Metal Marines for specifically the Super Nintendo, but that did come out for like Windows 3.1, so it did come out for PC.
It's
and I think
virtual
it was,
console.
Yeah, it got re-released.
If you want it.
Way back in December 1993 on this one, and it was developed by Namco, published by Namco on Mindscape, depending on which platform. We're going to talk about specifically the Super Nintendo version because there were some slight differences mainly with plot between Super Nintendo and PC. We don't know why, but you know,
because
whatever.
Reasons, deal with it.
Yeah. All right, so the world just got through an antimatter war.
That's the thing.
I'm gonna let that sink in. Just 2 years after the cataclysmic antimatter war. This is set in the year 2117, so it's almost upon us. I guess 2115 is the antimatter war, so we're about 100 years away. Yeah. 110, yeah, 100 years away.
Yeah, about 100 years
math
away.
Math is hard.
Wow, math is hard.
You play sort of a commander that will take control of like a military force who the primary force in this military is a giant metal 50-foot tall mecha called a Metal Marine. It's like 94 tons or whatever, Metal Marines.
Giant robot.
I got to say, you know what, this for the Super Nintendo, this looks really good. Like the
graphics were nice for Super Nintendo.
I really like the mech design. It struck me as being looking too good for Super Nintendo. Well, I don't remember Super Nintendo games looking that good.
All that being said, you're skip glossing over one fact, that this is an RTS.
It is an RTS. We didn't say that.
For the Nintendo.
Yeah,
Super Nintendo.
It is an RTS, and with RTS on Super Nintendo come certain challenges.
Challenges? Yeah, that's a way to put it.
Does everyone remember SimCity 2000 for the Super Nintendo? Or was it SimCity? I think it was just regular SimCity.
I must say that.
It was bad. It was rough.
Well, like, there's a reason there's not many RTSs for consoles.
Yeah.
PCs tend to be better with the mouse and the clicking.
Yeah. Most notable for this game,
The Super Nintendo did have a mouse.
It did have a mouse, but it was only for, like, Mario Paint.
I think, I think it may have only worked in Mario Paint. It's the only place I used it.
Had a lot of characters in Metal Marines. You had depending on which version you played, either the United Earth Empire Forces or the Space Colonies Allied Forces.
United Earth!
I think I like that. The UEF?
The YEEF?
Ooh, or the scaff. Or the scaff.
The E for the scaff.
So yeah, J.R. Bowman or Ernest Bowman, depending. He was like an intelligence advisor. Really cool. He shows up kind of as the veteran to tell you what to do. Sergeant Unaka Craft.
Goodness, we had this veteran.
She is in the Army. She's just like, I guess she's the electronics technician or whatever. And then you have Sergeant Harlan Sanders, who is, I guess, just like he helps out. Again, you don't really know these people. The story in here is really weird for your UEF, for the UEEF forces, for your allied forces. The best things, though, are the adversaries, the enemies, Space Colony Forces or Zorgoof's Empire. So Commander Bill Garland, Commander Joan Ryle, High Commander Lifton Schwaltz, Nikolai Zork.
Oh, you can always trust a dude named Nikolai.
Nikolai, right.
Just so you know.
So
Zork's the Great.
The whole thing is that he is obsessed with getting some antimatter missiles, and you just have to, like, prevent, you have to stop him from getting the missiles. And so this game is hard. You play it turn-based, and, well, it's not turn-based as in, you know, you take a turn, he takes a turn, you take a turn, he takes a turn. It is
right.
It is a special type of turn-based where you get a segment of time and you don't know when the enemy is going to attack. You can attack at any point, but first you have to build up your forces. You have to build some metal marine, you know, bays. You have to build bases. You have three bases. You can create dummy bases. It's really elaborate. Yeah. For,
like I said, you know how RTSs work.
Yeah, yeah.
Can't make it better.
We got some defensive structures.
Yeah, satellite camps.
I think offensive, we got metal marine hangar, which is awesome. Surface-to-surface missiles. ICBM silos, which are like big missiles.
Bigger missiles.
And then you've got defense structures, interceptor missiles, gun pods, interceptor air radar, anti-air radar, minefields, decoy bases, camouflage structures. And you think, you know, that's typical of a game. You've got offensive, defensive. This actually goes one step further, and you get sort of some support structures, too. You get bases that help you. You know, if all your bases fall, you lose. You can have...
Oh, there actually is decoy bases. I didn't realize when you said that. I thought you meant you could just, like, build bases.
No.
There's an actual building called a decoy
base.
Yeah,
it's cheaper. It's easier to build, but it's quicker to destroy. There's a war administration headquarters that gives you more money. There's an energy plant that allows you to get more rocket fuel. And then there's a factory that allows you to do things in a shorter amount of time. So there are a lot of really cool things. I've played this game. Again, we're doing this because Russell suggested Metal Marines. And I sort of got forced into playing Metal Marines. But you know what?
How did that work out for you?
I got it pushed in. It was bad because...
On a scale of 0 to Supreme Commander.
So it was...
On a scale of Chinese dog poop to to Supreme Commander, where did it fall?
It was. I don't know which is worse in those on that scale. Your number line is weird. It was hard.
Chinese dog poop.
It was hard. It was really, really hard. It was
so
very difficult.
That this game was hard.
Yeah.
So getting a lot of that vibe from you.
There's not a lot of the problem with games today is that they give you a lot of direction, and Metal Marines doesn't give you a lot of direction. I didn't know what to do until I saw Russell play it, and then I was like, all right, so I sort of get it.
Actually, you mentioned that. Back in the day, like, if you sat down and watched someone playing a game, usually you had no idea what they were doing, but they seemed to know exactly what they were doing.
Right, right.
And it was kind of like a learning curve was there to be in the cool kid club. You weren't nerdy enough if you didn't know how to play this game.
It's different now, right? It's
totally
different.
Being a nerd
different.
Is cool.
There's like a tutorial level for every game out there.
I mean, that doesn't match up to Mega Man X's tutorial level either.
No, it doesn't. But... yeah, so Metal Marines, you know, not my favorite game, certainly, but I did get a little bit better. I did understand it. I was able to beat the first two or three levels, but they get progressively harder, and that CPU is unrelenting sometimes. So, you know what? For being on the Super Nintendo, for coming out in 93...
Break controllers.
Yeah, I mean, it was such a good... It felt good when I was playing it, but I got frustrated with it because it is a hard game. Now, when you see somebody do really well at it and excel at it, when you were failing so hard...
That just makes you feel like a jerk.
It does. It makes me feel like the other person is really, really good at this game, or certainly at least has played it enough to feel like, you know... Maybe it's just that. Maybe if I just played it and played it and played it, it would get way better. Like, it's practice. But I felt like even though I understood what the point of the game was and I understand some of the mechanics of the game, I still failed the very next turn. So it's like, you know, there was nothing I can do. But
yeah. Again, like, actually, it's been years since I've even played this game. But I remember like you said, I just remember it being hard and difficult, and I didn't know what to do, so I probably just got frustrated and left it.
It's not a game that like a kid plays and learns. Like I feel like if I played it as a teenager.
My cousin had the Super Nintendo, so I had to go over there, and I only had so much time with Super Nintendo, so it generally boiled down to, well, let's play Super Mario Brothers.
Right, you want to get a lot of bang for your buck, and your buck is time, and the bang is enjoyment. So I mean, you want to be able to play really fun games in the little time you have. Metal Marines, in my opinion, is not really a fun game, but you feel a level of accomplishment when you win. So much accomplishment that you never pick up the game again.
I'm gonna frame this just because of the accomplishment.
That's it. It does have codes though. You have like little codes you could put in, little special codes to get to the next level. So it does do sort of a Mega Man classic sort of thing where you put in, I think, a 4 or 5 digit code.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And you're able to go to the next level.
Yeah, because you couldn't have memory for saving.
Well, I mean, it costs more money. Anyway, that was Metal Marines. That was our retro game.
Yay,
we're going to cut to a song. We're going to come back, and we're going to talk about some birthdays. I know, right? We're going to talk about it in a little bit. This is Power User by MC Frontalot. Remember, he is coming
to the Varsity.
When is he coming? Varsity and to the Beatnik in New Orleans. We're going to get those dates for you again after the break. But this is Power User by MC Frontalot. I'm MG.
I'm Red Bear.
You've been listening to Experience Points on Southeastern Zone.
90.9 FM KSLU.
Power. Welcome back to Southeastern Zone, 90.9 FM, KSLU. Still Experience Points, still MG.
Still and always Red Bear.
That was Power User by MC Frontalot. It feels so awesome to listen to that song and realize, like, yeah, that's how I feel whenever I'm installing something, when I'm on my command prompt, when I'm at my sysadmin job. I love it.
Throwing them command prompts, multi-monitor.
We looked it up, MC Frontalot. Coming to
varsity.
Town?
Yeah, yeah, varsity. That'd be Friday night. Friday night at the varsity, 9 o'clock, 18 years or older,
that's
kids.
That's the 12th, right?
Yeah, September 12th.
And then the next day at the Beatnik, 13th.
13th.
Saturday the 13th. Very unlucky.
New Orleans.
Not so unlucky, actually.
No, not really.
All right, so yesterday Destiny was released, and it was awesome, and it was crazy.
Yeah, it sounds like you played some Destiny.
September 9th. I'm a little tired, but I imagine I'll wake up when I get home. I'll get a Red Bull or something.
Play some more Destiny.
Get me an energy drink. But you know what happened yesterday, Bear? Of course you know.
I know what happened yesterday. So
the Dreamcast. The Sega Dreamcast. I'm tearing up already. The Sega Dreamcast turned 15 yesterday.
Now I feel old.
To be fair, it really turned 15 in November, last November.
November. That was the Japan release, but we here in America.
Yeah, September 9th, 1999. That's when North Americans, at least, South Americans got it some other time, I guess.
Wow.
September 9th, 1999. Got the American release of the Dreamcast, and it was awesome. Let's paint a picture real quick.
Let's paint a picture.
Before we get too far into...
I left my supplies at the apartment.
All right, so let's put it this way. The Dreamcast was the first console in the sixth generation of video game home consoles.
Yes.
In the fifth generation, we had really awesome consoles like the PlayStation.
And I still have mine. It still works and still plays Crash Bandicoot.
So the PlayStation was one of the biggest consoles, period.
It was the original PlayStation is probably one of my favorite consoles ever made.
We also had Nintendo 64, which was another huge breakout, amazing success.
Yep.
But we did have some really crappy consoles too. We had like the 3DO interactive multiplayer. We had the Atari Jaguar, which was Jaguar was such a bad console. And then we had the Sega Saturn, which the Sega Saturn was poised to be such a good console, but it just never found the right market. And that's the Sega Saturn, the Sega Dreamcast. So when Sega lost so much money on the Sega Dreamcast or the Sega Saturn, they actually lost like $309 million. That year.
In 90s money.
Right, in 90s money. So that was just on the poor performance of the Sega Saturn. They took an additional, they lost $450 million more
to develop. Nail in coffin.
Well, not yet. Not yet. They were like, this is the last thing we can do. Let's throw everything we have at it, assemble the team, make the thing, the next thing. And they created the Dreamcast, but they did go an additional $450 million in the hole. Now, that's not to say that they weren't making money on arcade titles at the time, because arcades were still around. And
it was the 90s.
And it's Sega, so they were making some pretty awesome titles for the Genesis, which was dying, but not necessarily dead at the time.
Not dead
yet. And the Saturn, which still was sort of making making money software-wise. It wasn't really making money. It just wasn't losing so much. But it was hemorrhaging money. They were hemorrhaging money on that old console. Anyway, so kicks off in 1998, kicks off the Dreamcast and started the sixth generation of consoles.
Yeah, it was out the door first. That was the whole point.
Right. It was followed by the PlayStation 2, the GameCube, and the Xbox.
And that was the problem.
Well, that yes. So
that was the exact problem.
So let's walk you through the chronology while we talk about, and then we're going to talk about how amazing the Dreamcast was.
Okay, fine, we'll do that.
So in 98, the Dreamcast launched in Japan, and unfortunately, Sega couldn't meet hardware demands, and that really turned off. They lost Japan, in fact. And when you lose Japan, that's a problem.
Especially
for a hardware market. For a software market, that's not that big of a deal. Like, Batman Arkham Knight is only going to be on PlayStation 4 in Japan. They're not going to get the Xbox One release for that.
Yeah,
that's
but again, not they don't really care about American comics as much as we do.
Right. So, and it's okay because it's just one software title on one system. But if you lost the Xbox One, if the Xbox One did not perform well in Japan, probably wouldn't see the Xbox One we see now. So the American, the North American Sega company Xbox or whatever. One. Yeah. So North American Sega company said, or the Sega branch in North America said, let's not do what the Japanese did. They were able to make good on over 300,000 pre-orders for the Dreamcast. It was so strong. Unfortunately, because Japan was so bad, the launch with Japan was so bad, it was still a $412 million loss in the first quarter of the year 2000. So yeah. A year later, after a strong release, Sega was still hemorrhaging money, and that was just the first quarter.
PlayStation 2 and Xbox.
Well, that they weren't out yet, not at that point.
No, but at that point, the buzz was out for the PlayStation 2 because I remember that.
So
me and some friends got fist fights over should I get a Dreamcast now or wait for PlayStation 2. Everyone was wanting to hold off for PlayStation 2.
It happened in between, and that was a good marketing campaign by CEO Ken Kutaragi at the time. In between the March 99. March 99, in between the Japanese release and the North American release, Ken Kutaragi from PlayStation, from Sony, pretty much said, like, we're making the PlayStation 2, here it is, let me demo it for you.
Yeah.
And they showed some stuff.
And that, to me, I believe that's what really shut down Sony.
Well,
not Sony, but shut down Sega.
At that point,
the Dreamcast.
The Dreamcast, everyone was starting to say, well, I have, the crazy things about it, the fact that it played DVDs.
DVDs was like a... That was one of the main selling points.
It was the
internet capability.
It was one of the cheapest. Well, it didn't have it at the time. They didn't have the network adapter.
That was the Dreamcast that actually had the network adapter built on.
The PlayStation 2 was the cheapest cheapest DVD player at the time. It was backwards compatible with PlayStation 1 games, or the original PlayStation games.
Which was amazing.
It still played music. It did everything that Dreamcast did and more. And
it looked better.
And it was arguably better looking. And people already had...
It stood vertically, Matt.
People had this...
Remember that? You could get the stand.
Or you just didn't.
You stood it up anyway. I wish you would get the stand.
Did
it ship with the stand? I don't remember.
It did not ship with the stand.
Okay, you had to buy that separate.
People looked at Sony and they said, you gave us something amazing last time. And then people look at Sega and they go, you didn't really deliver on the Saturn.
Man, so, I'm back in the 90s having this debate.
Yeah. So...
Early 2000s.
Let's go through the hardware of the Dreamcast. Because again, we're talking down on the Dreamcast.
No, I'm going to say, we want to lift up the Dreamcast because it was an amazing console, and I don't think there's a bad title released for it.
There are some really bad titles for it, but
maybe I just never got my hands on a bad title because I loved some. I mean, Hydro Thunder was out on it.
Yep. So before we get into the games and before we get into the
hardware,
let's go ahead and just kind of finish it off. After the first quarter 2000, where they had that additional $412 million loss for the year, they still had a $389-ish million loss. So for the rest of the three quarters, they only made $80-90 million in offsetting that huge loss.
Right.
And in 2001, Sega, at the end of 2001, Sega officially announced that they were no longer going to produce the Dreamcast. And at the end of March 2001, they stopped completely. So 2001, death of the Dreamcast, March, they said, we're only going to do software, which is good in a way because now we've got Sega titles on a lot of different systems, which is pretty cool.
I believe Sega's doing fairly well with that.
Yeah, Sega's not doing bad. All right, so let's look at the hardware. So for the price at the time.
What was the price?
This is $200 back in 1999. It was $199.99. We're going to say $200.
Yeah, so $200, 90s money.
You got a decent CPU, 200 megahertz Super H. Which, again, 200 megahertz sounds horrible, but in game consoles, it's different. This was 128-bit game.
Yeah, and this is back in the day, too.
GPU at 100 megahertz, separate completely GPU. It was by NEC and Video Logic. 16 megs of RAM, 8 of main RAM.
That's actually pretty impressive.
8 megs of video RAM. It had separate video RAM, and 2 megs of sound RAM. So it was able to do really rich sound, really awesome stereo sound, in fact. Awesome video, because it had its own buffer, and then it was able to hold a ton of stuff in RAM. So you'd hear the CD going rank, 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 rank a lot, and then it would just play and you'd be smooth until you had to load a new track or whatever, and it would just load it into the buffer. Media was really awesome because it not only did CDs for like music and things, it also did something called the GD-ROM, the Gigabyte Disk ROM. And this was 1.2 gigabyte capacity. It was something special that Sega did. I'm not sure if it contributed at all to the huge amount of loss that they had.
May have, but like it was one of those things that was a great idea and didn't change the world. Like
it was cheaper.
Hoped.
It was cheaper than a DVD.
It was cheaper than a DVD,
but it was less capable than a DVD.
But more capable than a CD.
Right. So it was right in the middle. Output. This is one of the best things about the Dreamcast. I own a Dreamcast, and I own a VGA cable for it.
I got the black sport edition.
You do. You don't play sports though.
No, but it's black. It's awesome,
trendier. Though. It's better. The output on this thing: VGA, SCART, S video, and composite. Composite are the red, yellow, and the white cables.
Yeah, it separates out the colors.
The yellow cables.
I'm sorry.
Separated sound and color.
Yeah.
I'm sound and video.
I was thinking component.
Right.
Ignore me.
Composite's the worst video you can possibly get out of a console. S-Video is a little bit better. SCART is better than S-Video. VGA is the best. In fact, it outputs at 480p. So
which is pretty good.
480p at the time is actually high definition, and it can scale linearly with like an upscaler. So you see a lot of people bringing this thing to, say, like a VGA to HDMI and getting it in 1080p, and it's upscaled, but everything's sharper, everything's nicer because VGA is a digital, is still a digital signal.
I don't think that's a true statement.
Or no, it's not, but it's less
analog.
It's more digital. It's a higher quality, higher quality analog
it's
signal.
It's more digital than VGA or than S-Video.
The crazy thing
you do that.
About the Dreamcast, and you already kind of gave it away, was the built-in modem.
Yes.
You were able to go on to SegaNet or Dream Arena, depending on where and when
or
you
Game
decided
Spy.
To. Or Game... Did it do Game Spy?
It did Game Spy.
That must have been through SegaNet then.
Maybe.
I think so. So you could get online and play with your friends, and this was really one of the first times you could have done that. Unless you got a PC.
Yeah, I did that on the PC. We were back in the day because my mom was always angry that computers called the house and they were going to hack us.
Right. That's not how that works, but who knew? Who knew at the time?
Yeah, who knew?
We saw Matthew Broderick in War Games.
Yeah.
This thing had a really awesome idea for developers wherein there was no operating system on the actual system. The operating system was on the disk. So whenever you wanted to do something, you could use any operating system that was compatible with it. Of those, there was Sega OS, Windows, Compact Edition, Specialized Windows CE.
Yeah, I must have didn't do the CE of Windows.
And Callisto OS.
But that was stored on the disk.
That was stored on the disk.
Wow,
so you can make a decision on what OS is better for your game and load it at runtime rather than putting it on the game console and having to patch your OS on the game console, which was really neat. And of course, it had 4 controllers. That was sort of a thing after PlayStation 1 multi-tap in Nintendo 64. You had 4
controllers. We knew that was the future.
Okay, so that's the hardware. Let's get into some games because I loved a ton of these games. We have a big write-up on exppoints.com as well, so you can go ahead and check that out.
Check that out.
Something with Dreamcast. It was Sega's big last-ditch effort console. A lot of what we were seeing were, now that we have a 128-bit machine, something that can do 3D graphics and awesome sound, all at the same time, we saw a lot of home ports from their arcade games.
Right.
So Hydro Thunder was one.
That was one of my favorites.
Virtua Fighter, Street Fighter, Soul Calibur, the Crazy Taxi series, Virtua Tennis.
Oh, yeah, Crazy Taxi was
Marvel versus Capcom. Sega Rally.
See, all these are reasons to own a Dreamcast.
Dead or Alive 2. They are the most accurate representation of the arcade experience without actually owning
the arcade
box yet. The graphics were tight. Everything was great. We've been playing ever since, you know, we were like, all right, we're going to do the Dreamcast show.
We've been playing. What did we play? Was it Police Academy?
Virtual Cop 2.
That was a good one.
On the Sega Smash Pack Volume 1. There was only one volume, but...
To make more?
You play a ton of... Well, we played a ton of these games. I know we played Dead or Alive 2. Yeah. We played Power Stone 2, which was Power Stone was effectively Super Smash Bros.
Super Smash before Super Smash.
Yeah, but I think Mario Party had it before Stone had it.
Okay.
Jet Set Radio, which was Jet Grind Radio originally.
Which is amazing.
The 2K series from Sega.
Like, and then, going back to Jet Grind Radio, that's just a pretty game.
It's the cel-shaded, it made cel-shading popular.
Right.
And that was beneficial.
It really did.
There were some eclectic, slightly more rhythmic games like Samba de Amigo and Rez, which are really great. Ikaruga, which is one of the best shoot-em-ups I've ever played. I re-bought this on Steam, and I am so happy with it. Resident Evil Code Veronica actually came out on the Dreamcast before the PlayStation 2. It came out as Veronica X on the PlayStation 2. This was the first Resident Evil game to feature 3D environments. It still featured static camera angles, but it was the first
static camera angles.
Yeah, but everything in the entire game was a 3D environment. You could interact with
it. Which is awesome.
In some way. It had Phantasy Star Online, which was, I think, one of the first, or if not the first, certainly the most promising console-based MMOs. I remember playing Phantasy Star Online, and it was fantastic. And then you had Sonic Adventure, Skies of Arcadia, which is one of my all-time favorite RPGs. And then you had Shenmue. Shenmue is one of the greatest games in the world, if you disagree or wrong.
Wow.
I
believe MG has strong feelings.
I feel very strongly about
it.
If you go in Google Shenmue, you will find everything about it. I will be doing a review at some point in the future after I've got really excited about Shenmue again.
Which seems to be happening at this time.
At this moment.
Excitement.
We don't want the segment to run super long, so we're going to talk about the controller, some accessories, and then what you can do to get yourself a Dreamcast 15 years after they've been made. They're still available, believe it or not. The controller's pretty cool.
The controller is amazing. I don't know what you're saying pretty cool
It
for.
Was, well, okay, so it took the analog stick from the joystick from the N64, moved it up to where we pretty much have it on the Xbox now.
Yeah. Well, you can tell Microsoft, especially if you look at the original Xbox controller.
Yeah.
They basically just ripped this off and took the screen out.
Yep.
Which is not a bad thing for Microsoft to do.
No.
That was a genius move.
No.
And then they shrunk it down once people complained.
It the controller features four buttons on the right side, two triggers, a D-pad, an analog, like little joystick, and then a start button. But it also features two slots for accessories. And now the accessories are where it's at. You know, we had a memory card for the Nintendo 64 and for the PlayStation.
And they plugged into the console. The N64 went to the controller.
Right.
But the PlayStation plugged into the console.
You had the expansion memory unit that went into the N64 console.
So
the memory cards were called VMUs. There were separate memory cards that didn't have a video screen.
But I'm sorry if you had that.
VMU is visual memory unit. It's this awesome little like Tamagotchi looking thing.
Well, it's its own little console.
It's a tiny little console with a battery.
It really was.
You can play games, you can save files
it
between
has
two of
games
them.
On it.
You can actually buddy up two of them, like connect two of them.
And transfer.
And transfer data, play head to head on some games.
Yeah.
When you plugged it into the controller, there was a window, like a viewport window in the controller.
Cut out for
you. That you can see the screen and it would put information. Like we were playing Virtual Cop, it was telling us our accuracy.
Yeah.
So we were constantly.
Which went down every time we looked down at our accuracy.
We were firing and we'd look down and we'd go, oh, I'm down to 38% accuracy. It had the typical type of, you know, accessory controllers like the light guns and the fishing rod for that one game. And
the controller with that VMU is the best thing ever.
Yep.
I just want to say, if you haven't experienced the VMU, you haven't
lived. It did fall into the same category as the N64 controller, where if you wanted vibration or rumble, you had to buy the jump pack or the rumble pack. I mean, that's just sort of how it was. The
VMU, bro.
The best thing that Sega released for the Dreamcast that was not an actual accessory you play with was something called a VGA box. And you could actually buy these in the form of cables or boxes where you're able to output VGA connected to a monitor, connected to a projector, connected
to
a really good screen.
Something we ran into is not every game would work with this.
Right. So most
games. I guess
games,
that goes down to the OS built into the CD.
So it's a little switch for the game coded into the game. Is it VGA compatible or not? And I have just a cable that goes to a VGA end that plugs into a monitor. But some of the nicer ones, they actually go to a box where you plug in a cable to a VGA monitor, or you've got S-Video, or you've got composite coming out of it, and you switch. So if one doesn't work, you just need the hookups, and you can get to the next one. Mm-hmm. And that's what I should have got. I didn't get it. I plan on getting that in the future. But it allowed this game console to sort of exist and be, I guess, sort of a cult type of video game, a cult favorite. cult classic type of video game console. It's still available.
It definitely is, yeah.
It is still available. Oh, but before we go, there was a broadband adapter as well, so you could play high-speed broadband network. And there was really cool stuff you could do with that. But it's still available. You can get it off of Amazon. You can get it off of Second and Charles.
Get the Sports Edition. It looks awesome.
You can go to eBay and get it. E-Starland,
and the nice thing about the Sport Edition is it's already black, so it doesn't get all dingy over time.
Yeah.
Remember in the 90s when every computer was that beige color, and now like they're all gross-looking?
Yeah. It's like they're all yellowed with age. They look like cigarettes.
Yeah. And if it's black, you just got to brush the dust off, and oh, look, it's black again.
So the really cool thing that we don't officially kind of condone normally, but this game console was very easily...
Put on your black hat.
This game console allowed you to play burnt games almost without any care. That's not to say it doesn't have security in it. It just had security that was... easy to circumvent, and that was something called MILCD, and I think that's Multimedia Interface Language, and that's something Sega
Sounds
came
good.
Up with.
That's believable.
That's something Sega came up with so that the Dreamcast could sort of be a media center or a center of your media console that you could put music CDs in that had MILCD formatted content on, and it would allow the Dreamcast to display nice menus, nice extra stuff like maybe video content. So it was like Super CD audio. It was something like that. But by using MILCD formatting, crackers and hackers, whatever, are able to burn games off of a GD-ROM dump and then put it on a 700 megabyte or an 860 megabyte CD, just a normal CD or a 70-minute or a 90-minute CD, depending, and play that.
CDs were measured in minutes.
Play that in funny. The Dreamcast. With no problems. The Dreamcast doesn't need a mod chip or anything, which is really, really great in this case, because after 15 years, I don't have many CDs that aren't, you know, in good, that aren't destroyed, rather. So, you know, it's important that this console, when you have it, you still have the ability to play these awesome games. And there's some really awesome places online, dcisozone.com or .org, I can't remember, Emu Paradise. You know, you should buy the original release. I own a ton of original releases for the Dreamcast.
Said you want to be able to play them.
I have burned the games from like an ISO site, so I never ever have to use the discs that I bought. And I feel that's okay. I don't feel like
I'm not a legal advisor, but I'm with you. I feel like that's
I feel
fine.
Like it's okay. And in the end, Sega doesn't sell Dreamcast games anymore. They're practically vaporware. The console's dead. So it lives in our hearts, but it's dead commercially.
Hearts and souls.
So I don't feel that there's really a big problem with buying or with pirating these games, because no one is going to really make profit. The original developers aren't going to make profit off these games. The original developers aren't even really employed the same way
anymore.
Again,
not advising piracy.
Right.
Just saying, doesn't care.
Right. So we're going to cut to a song real quick, and then we're going to come back. We're going to end out the show. This is Airbrushed by Anna Monoguchi. I'm MG.
And I'm Red Bear.
You've been listening to Experience Points on Southeastern Zone.
90.9 FM, KSLU.
Welcome back to Southeastern Zone, 90.9 FM KSLU. This is Experience Points. I'm MG.
And I'm Red Bear.
We're all out of time, but before we go, let's let you in on the website again. Bear, what is it?
We got that website. It's exppoints.com. Double tap the P in the middle.
You can hear this show that's airing right now, just shortly after it's been aired. You can hear all of our previous shows on iTunes, Stitcher,
or on the
website.
Plenty of audio to keep you entertained.
Yeah, I mean, we have almost an entire weekend, I think.
I challenge you. Go through our audio archives and come up with things to argue with us on and email us.
We love arguing. That's something we love
geeks
doing.
Geeks love to argue. You ever notice that? Been to a con? Geeks love arguing.
So we're all out of time. Please check us back next week.
Same place.
Next Wednesday, 9 to 10 p.m. on KSLU. And we're going to talk about something else that's really cool. We need to probably think these shows out a little bit more.
Nah, man.
No?
Do it live.
All right. Thanks again for listening. This is going
to...
We're gonna end with Lightbringer by Pentakill. I'm MG.
And I'm Red Bear.
You've been listening to Experience Points on Southeastern Zone.
90.9 FM KSLU.